Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hey everyone, and welcome to this episode of Pixels. It's going to be a quick and easy solo show today. My name is Patrick Beja, and we are going to have a little chat about a few things that happened in the gaming industry this past couple of weeks. The Destiny 2 beta has happened, and I'm going to be talking about this for a little bit. We also have Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle that came out. A bunch of other little bits of news. PUBG is still basically the king of everything. We have Microsoft announcing stuff in VR, Twitch announcing extensions, however you want to call them, and a bunch of other things. And then I'll take the opportunity of having this shorter show to discuss a few of the games that are going to be coming out for the fall. It's a really big year, and the fall is usually the biggest part of that year, and it's not untrue this time. We really have a lot of things coming in the next 3 months or so, and I thought it would be a good opportunity as we're entering into September and into the fall to tell you which ones of those I think are going to be interesting, or at least mention a few. So, yeah, the first little bit is going to be the games that I've had an opportunity to try. There's Destiny 2 and Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle. So, Destiny 2 is not really the first time that we are talking about it. We had the beta, the PlayStation or the console, I guess, beta a month ago or so. And it was, you know, it was fun enough. My assessment at the time was that it was too small a slice of the game to be an appropriate way of estimating whether or not it's going to be worth it and whether or not it's going to be improved over the first iteration of the game. You guys know that I really enjoyed Destiny 1 and the first real expansion, The Taken King. I thought it was one of the most engaging games there was in the past few years. And the Destiny 2 PC beta happened for a couple of days. I think it was 3 days, four if you had pre-ordered the game on PC, which I haven't. It's going to be coming out in just a few days on consoles, but in about a month and a half, October 24th on PC. It's available through the Battle.net app, so if you are one of the Blizzard fanboys that listens to the show, you know that that little icon has appeared on your app, and it's nagging you every time you launch any other game. And so the takeaway from that beta specifically is quite surprising. I mean, as I mentioned, I've played the first game on PlayStation 4 a lot. I've probably clocked in hundreds of hours on that PlayStation 4 version of Destiny 1 and The Taken King, a little bit less after that. I thought it was repetitive. And The first impression on the PC version is really good. Like, if you've never played Destiny, which many of you might not have, it's well, you'll know it's a first-person shooter, and it felt good on console. I mean, it's Bungie, and they are the masters of console FPSs, so it's not like it wasn't good on the consoles. But it will seem dumb for all of the PC Master Race people, but playing it on the PC is kind of a revelation. I've only played like an hour or so, so I haven't played it too much, but wow, playing an FPS on PC is, even for Destiny, it feels like that's the platform it was meant for. And yes, again, PC Master Race people will tell me, duh. Of course, that's what it is. That's where it should be. It's an FPS. But honestly, I didn't expect it to feel that good, given how absolutely competent, more than competent, the gunplay was fantastic on consoles. So I'm not saying I'm going to ditch the console version, especially since it's going to be coming out a month and a half in advance of the PC version. But if you're still hesitating, if you want the game and you're not sure, you haven't played you haven't played the first one, you're not certain that you're going to like it, you're thinking, well, I'm not in such a hurry to play it, maybe wait for the PC version. I mean, obviously, it's not just how it feels. It's also a different experience if you're in your couch or if you're at your desk. And if you want to play with friends who usually play on consoles, then you might want to go that route. I'm not saying there's a lesson or a huge, like, recommendation here, but it's just that the way it felt on PC surprised me. How much better it felt. Can I say better? Yeah, I think I can. How much better it felt than the console version. So I'm still going to be getting it on console. I mean, I've already pre-ordered it, and I'm sure I'm going to be very happy with it on console. But I might end up getting it on PC as well. I'm not 100% certain, but I might. And just for, you know, as a reminder, I don't engage with gaming companies. To a lesser extent, I guess I do with Blizzard because, well, I used to work there, so obviously. But my point is, I'm not getting those for free. So I bought it on PlayStation, and I might spend the money again for the PC version. So that's how good it felt. So, yeah, that was surprising. And the game itself is still really fun for what we've seen. The question that remains, as it did for the PlayStation beta, the console beta, is how engaging will it be over the long run? And that hasn't changed. It was the same slice of gameplay. So I guess we'll see. It's coming out in like 4 days on the 8th, this coming Friday on consoles. So we'll have the answer fairly quickly. People are going to rush through the single player experience. It's probably going to be a few hours of gameplay. And then it's what it is and what it's been for a couple of years now. A loot game, a loot grinder, a Diablo / WoW / all of those stereotypes apply, and we'll see how fun it is. Again, I think I've mentioned this a few times. Everything I'm hearing from people who know people is that, basically not from the company, but people who have been playing it for a while, is it is really well crafted. There's always something to do. It's super fun. It's very varied. So, yeah, I mean, we'll have to wait and see how it actually plays to make the decision. I know I'll be trying it fairly quickly. The other bit of news about Destiny 2 is that the first DLC is slated for, I think the leaks we're getting is December, which would make sense. That's how it worked out for the first game as well. It would be December, and it's got something to do with Osiris. You don't really care if you don't know Destiny, but it will be on Mercury. The key part of the story from that expansion might be the curse of Osiris and located on Mercury. So we'll see what happens there, but we are already expecting some DLC, which is, you know, that's how it works for these kinds of games. You want to keep the content fresh, and 3 months after the release, so September to December, is probably a good time to get a new piece of content. The difference with MMOs or classic business model MMOs is that, of course, you don't have a subscription, unlike WoW. So the expansions these are more like content patches, what in WoW would be 7.2, 7.3, these kinds of things. They are, you need to pay for them. So it's about $20 usually. So yeah, that is going to be happening in December if the leaks are accurate. The other game I wanted to talk about is Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle. That was a big surprise when it was officialized at E3. I think it was at E3. That very emotional moment during the Ubisoft conference. Was it? I can't remember if it was. Yes, it was. It was the Ubisoft thing. It wasn't a Nintendo thing. It was really emotional with Miyamoto coming on stage and praising the director of the game and him getting like all teary-eyed. It was all cute and sweet. But the main lesson there was that the game seemed to be a really good game, which honestly, if you had told me Rabbids and Mario Gabe would be really compelling, I mean, obviously we all, most of us love Mario. Rabbids, I guess it's hit and miss. Some people love it, some people don't, and most of the people who love it seems to be on the younger side. But the game held promise as a tactical strategy game, basically an XCOM for noobs. And everyone who tried it said it really works. It is well-crafted. It's really well put together from a gameplay point of view, and the improbable merging of Rabbids and Mario actually is coherent. It's silly, it's fun, it makes sense. So I really hesitated to get it because I am absolutely not an XCOM fan. I've tried it, you know, very shortly, a couple of times. I've done like half a mission and I was like, this is not for me. It's just not my kind of game. It's probably great, but I would rather focus on games that I love. And so I was really hesitant about this one. On one hand, my Switch is laying dormant for a little bit. I didn't play ARMS. I didn't play Mario Kart too much. And I've been playing other games. So I wanted a game for the Switch. I took it away on a weekend a trip we did this past weekend, and I thought it was a good opportunity. I'm also going to be traveling a little bit later in the month. So, yeah, I got it. I figured everyone's praising it. Let's give it a try. But it wasn't like I'm a huge fan and I want it because I'm going to love it. I played about, I don't know, a few hours. I'm almost done with the first world, which is not, you know, too much, but it's about, I don't want to say a number of hours, but it's a good chunk to try, not to I wouldn't say I'm any significant amount into the game. It's the beginning, but it's still more than the tutorial. And I'm surprised. It's actually pretty fun. Not that I'm surprised it's fun, but it's fun for me, which that I didn't expect. It is absolutely fulfilling what I believe to be the promise of XCOM for idiots. I am the idiot in that scenario. It's easy to start. It seems to be ramping up difficulty in a way that is not off-putting if you don't know that kind of game. It merges the two worlds in a way that is kind of delightful, meaning the setting is the familiar Mario setting with the colorful backgrounds, the animated style that we know, the characters that we know, and the comedy, the silliness of the Rabbids really integrates well into that that setting. It's just, it's dumb, it's good-spirited humor, it's silly, and it works. I wouldn't have thought that it would, but it really does. There's also a very clever way of putting the different levels together. You don't, you know, go back to a menu and then go to, you know, stage 1A, 1B, 1C. I mean, those stages are there. I mean, it's Mario style. It's word 1A, 1, 1, 1, 2, 1, 3, etc. But the link between those is you roaming the world of those battlegrounds. And between the battlegrounds, you have like essentially what is corridors, but you have little puzzles here and there on that, on the way. And you have the coins you need to get that will give you, that will allow you to buy improved equipment for your characters. But and the majority of those coins are going to come from you winning the different stages in different, you know, the better you finish, the more coins you're going to get. And the huge majority of them are going to be gotten like that. But you get a few here and there, just enough to motivate you to explore. And there are little, as I said, puzzles in that environment, which make for a great transition and almost like a break time for players like me. Like, I don't necessarily want to be chaining maps one after the other, and it would get fairly quickly kind of exhausting for me. But those little transitions allow me to relax and to sort of build up the anticipation for the next actual gameplay stage, which I really appreciate. So the gameplay itself, as I said, it's fairly simple. At least it starts that way. But already by the time you get into, there are maybe each world 1-1-1-2 is divided into one or two sub encounters. And overall, I've done maybe 15 of those, something like that. And they're easing you into the strategy of it really well. And at first, I felt like people, you know how people, some people who play Hearthstone just don't get the strategy aspect of it. You just play the cards, you don't understand how they combo and how some abilities work well with others and all of that. That's what it was for me. And that's how strategy games are for me most of the time, because I've never taken the time, I guess, to play them for 20 years since I played them in at Sega and Nintendo days. But here, you start like that, and then if you try a couple of things, you understand, oh, okay, if I do this part and this part, the jump mechanic, and you can rush to an enemy and then go back into cover, and like you learn to maximize the damage you're going to do and the positioning in a very organic way. So for me, it really worked. It didn't make that genre all of a sudden my favorite genre in the world. I'm not saying that I'm going to spend all my waking hours playing that game, but the extent to which I'm now enjoying it and it's bringing me into seeing the joy of that tactical strategy genre is exactly what I was hoping for the game to be without daring to think that it would actually do it. So yeah, definitely a fun game, a good purchase. And if you have a Switch, definitely don't buy a Switch for it. But if you do have a Switch and if you are a fan of XCOM, my guess is you've probably already bought it. If you have a Switch, if you're not a fan and you were on the fence thinking, well, is this for me? I really don't know that kind of game. I think you might consider, if you have an extra, you know, $60 or $50 burning your pocket and you're looking for a new game and a fresh experience, I think that's a solid purchase. And it's even more interesting because of that improbable success that Ubisoft is seeing there and the heartwarming collaboration between Ubisoft, that has always believed in Nintendo and always put out games for their consoles, even when the future was uncertain for those consoles. Sometimes, like in the case of the Wii U, maybe unluckily so. But overall, great, great success, great experience. And it's really the kind of video game industry adventure, I want to say, that makes people who love video games smile. And that's the best we can hope for these things, I suppose. So yeah, that was Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle. A couple of other things for Nintendo. There was a Nindies. Wow, that name hurts my mouth when I utter it. The Nindies showcase, the Nintendo Indies showcase for 2007 and 2017 and 2018. Nothing incredibly notable. I mean, there are a number of indie titles that are going to be great on the Switch. There's a return of No More Heroes, for those who know. I guess it's half indie. But there are indie classics like Super Meat Boy Forever that most of them we already knew that they were going to be on the Switch. A new game for the Shovel Knight series, SteamWorld Dig 2, Morphe's Law, which is a weird shooter. I'll let you go check it out if you want to. Bunch of other games, but there's Polybridge as well, which fans of Reddit will probably remember from a few months ago. And the interesting thing is that the Switch is apparently succeeding in what the Vita have succeeded to do, which means creating a dynamic between AAA titles from usually first party and indies to indie games to hold it over until the next AAA title. This is what we were seeing shape up as the modus operandi, I guess, for the Nintendo Switch for the first few weeks and months of its life. And now it's really solidifying itself as the way it's going to be taking its niche place in the video game landscape, in the console landscape. So it's kind of like the Vita, but with a much more solid first-party lineup. The games are completely original, and they are high quality. At least they have been until now. And of course, we have Mario coming in a couple of months. So, and of course, the indies find a great home on that console. It's powerful enough to easily run most of them, but they are the kind of games that you are that are going to get more of the spotlight on themselves because the library isn't huge, unlike the PlayStation and Xboxes, where all of the games, well, not all of the games, but a lot of the games come out on every platform, so it crowds the market a little bit. So, yeah, that's good news for the Switch. It's still a very solid lineup, and that indies showcase was, it's not going to change. I think for people like me who play on many different consoles and who play on PC and who have opportunities to play all the time, it's probably not going to be the most interesting, and, well, I guess the bottom line is I'm not a huge fan of indie gaming, so that's not going to be something that I'm going to be looking for on the Switch. But for some people, it's going to be a very interesting way of accessing those games that maybe they haven't played in when they came out on PC or these kinds of things. So, oh, and Miiverse is getting shut down, which means some of the games for Wii U and 3DS are losing functionality, but I mean, no one is really crying about it. It's just really interesting that Nintendo is continuing on that trajectory of basically saying what they mentioned, I think, for the NES Classic, the NES Classic last year, was that they were a quote-unquote small company. It's not a tiny company, but it's not a huge company either, and they don't have the bandwidth to manage everything. And the Miiverse had fun functionality for its time, but now they're moving on to something else, and they want to focus on the things they're actually focusing on, which ultimately I think is a good thing for the company, for Nintendo. All right, let's move on to some other little tidbits of news. And let's start with the already king of games of the year of 2017. I mean, of course, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, which has been making headlines, I think, ever since it's been released. And for good reason. It's still getting incredible numbers in every possible metric. And this time, we have a few. Basically, it has overtaken Dota 2 for the most concurrent gamers on Steam for, well, it happened a couple of weeks ago. And, I mean, it overtook pretty much everything, and it's still growing. I don't know that it is currently still getting significant or consistent numbers above Dota 2, but that hadn't happened. Dota 2 had been the biggest one for a very long time. So it is, it's significant, and I think it's getting Valve to, they're not worrying so much because they are making money on every purchase of that game, but it is kind of worrying when your game is not the first one on the list, I suppose. And it's even more worrisome for Valve, I think, because we're seeing that a lot of the players that play PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds are coming from CSGO. Of course, CSGO being one of the main Valve games. And what we've seen from, I don't want to say something stupid, so I'm going to check the source. Right, it's Steam Spy again. Steam Spy is also the source for the overtaking of Dota 2. But what they've seen is that 55% of PUBG owners are CSGO players. And on the game time, they've noticed that they used to play CSGO 50% more than the average person. And now they play 30% less than the average person. So, yeah, basically a big portion of the population for PUBG comes from CSGO. And that's not necessarily surprising. I'm not saying this like, oh my God, it's the big surprise, CSGO is dying. That obviously not. I think what this tells us is, where does that immense population for PUBG come from? And it seems they come from everywhere. They're very numerous, but they seem to be coming in majority from CSGO. So that's where the transfer is happening. And the other thing, which is also interesting, in which is showing how much, you know, PUBG is dominating everything, is that for the first time since they started monitoring Twitch, GameoLoco, which is looking at Twitch viewership data, it's a company from France, they've noticed that for the first time since they started monitoring in 2014, League is not the first, is not on rank one across the entire month. And PUBG is obviously rank one. So the really interesting thing here is that we've seen sales numbers being insane for PUBG. It's now probably reaching close to 10 million. I mean, they've announced 8 million a few weeks ago. So they're at least above that. We're seeing concurrency being huge as they overtake Dota 2, or they have overtaken Dota 2 at least once. So that's very significant. People are playing it and playing it passionately. And viewership on Twitch is also huge. Now, obviously, all of those are correlated, but you might have games that get a great sales numbers, but that doesn't necessarily translate into a long tail of viewership on Twitch, for example. Some games sell really well, but aren't really, I'm not even talking about esports, but aren't really viewer friendly. And that one certainly is. So none of these are super new pieces of news, but I think they're significant in establishing the fact that PUBG is not only continuing to be incredibly successful, but continuing to be successful in all of those areas that are traditionally, that aren't necessarily linked traditionally. And we're already seeing this, but it's getting the copycats to start working on PUBG lookalikes. And we're seeing a lot of those on mobile, actually. So that's an interesting trend, which I'm sure we're going to see increase in the next few months. Microsoft has announced a bunch of things around VR. One of them, so they have their mixed reality headsets that are coming towards the end of the year. And they are, the most interesting part in those is that they have inside-out tracking, which means the cameras and sensors on the device itself, on the headset, manage to track you, so you don't need to set up those totems and trackers around the room. That's a very important improvement. They are supposed to be able to work with lower types of cheap chipsets or lower performance chipsets. They claim that you can play with integrated graphics, but they claim that you will get 60 frames per second. And in VR, 60 frames per second usually implies Barftown, so I wouldn't recommend it. You need external GPUs to attain 90 frames per second, which is what you need for those headsets. And they're coming out around $300 to $400. which is a reasonable price. We've seen the HTC Vive and the Oculus Rift and actually the PlayStation VR headset get price cuts recently. So the Windows mixed reality headsets are still more interesting financially than those other ones, or maybe not than the PlayStation VR. It depends on the model. You have different manufacturers building those Windows mixed reality headsets, but the prices aren't as far apart as they would have been a few months ago. But so we'll have to see which models are good, which aren't, and that will be discussed when they are actually available. The one thing that's really interesting, though, is that Microsoft has been working with Valve, apparently, because those mixed reality headsets will be able to play Steam VR games, and that is hugely important, because obviously that means that the library of games available to them is immediately significant. And that's what you want when you buy a new headset. If you get one for Christmas, not only do you have hopefully just one cable going to your computer and no setup of complicated things, or not too much, but you also already have a lot of games that are available. So that's a good thing. You also will have Minecraft and Halo experiences coming to the platform, I suppose. And we don't know exactly how it's going to work because it's mixed reality, meaning AR and VR. So we know a lot about the VR part. We don't know so much about the AR part, how it's going to work with the HoloLens, but that's not so much gaming, so I won't discuss it too much. Another interesting announcement is one from Twitch, which has enabled extensions for Twitch to customize the streaming experience. And those things are starting to be developed now. They've given a few examples. So one of them, which will speak to many of you, I think, is in Hearthstone. There are already some add-ons that allow you to do this, but now it's going to be integrated into the Twitch service itself. For example, in Hearthstone, if you, as the viewer, hover over a card, you're going to be able to see the details of the card as if you were doing it in game. That is one example of the types of add-ons you might get. There are tons of others. I'm not going to be mentioning them all, but basically, it's mods for Twitch, for the website, which is really interesting. One of the things that they're showing is, for example, if you want the chat room to tell you which card to keep or which choice to make, you can see that kind of choices be implemented and see them on screen, etc., etc. It really opens up the interactivity and the ability to make the experience even more engaging and satisfying for the viewers and for the streamer. I think it makes it even easier and more fun for the streamers as well, and that's a really important thing to notice as well. Star Citizen's facial recognition has been demoed. Well, so it's facial recognition applied to your avatar over the internet, and that could be super cool or super annoying after like the first day. What it does is basically they partnered up with a company. How many things that game is going to have is mind-boggling, but they added that functionality. They partnered with a company that does face recognition they can use apparently a regular webcam to do face recognition and map your facial movements, not features. Basically, it's not so that the characters look like you, but that they move their mouth, face, eyes, nose like you do in real time, and it sends it over the internet to the people you're playing with. So if you're in a squad with three people and they start talking, their characters are hopefully going to be moving their mouths the way they would if they were saying what they're saying. And, you know, if they are surprised, you'll see their eyes widen, etc., etc. If it works like that, it could be really cool. Obviously, it's not going to work in VR because your face is covered, so that's kind of a bummer. But yeah, it's the kind of presence that you can get from such a simple addition, I think, is not to be discarded. And if it works well, it could be... I'm saying it could be great. I don't honestly know if it's gimmicky or actually great. And for us to get the final decision on that, we're going to have to wait and see how it actually works out. So, but I thought it was really interesting. And once again, this is something that, what's the name of the company? Robert Space Industries is getting into. And wow, so many things they're doing with that game. Yeah, so we'll have to see what happens there. Very quick detour by the fighting game corner of Patrick's heart. The Yakuza team is making a Fist of the North Star game. The Yakuza part, I know the game peripherally. I haven't really ever played Yakuza itself, but Fist of the North Star, I think many people my age are going to be, let's say, raising an eyebrow or two at a game like this. We only have very little. We don't really know what it's going to be like to play. It's going to be coming out on PlayStation 4. Obviously, Sega is publishing it. And, Fist of the North Star, the fabled animation that many of us will remember very fondly. I know that I certainly spent my fair share of time trying to mimic Kenshiro's "Omae wa mo shindeiru," right? You're already dead. And then him walking slowly towards away from the guy, and the guy exploding in gruesome ways. Yeah, it's not an anime for children, but it's really cool. So anyway, there have been many, many games based on that franchise. None of them were actually good. We'll have to see if that one turns out to be acceptable. And Capcom is re-releasing Street Fighter 2 on Super NES, like the actual cartridge, and it's red. This is the kind of news I don't really usually cover on this show, but Street Fighter 2, I mean, who hasn't spent a lot of time on Street Fighter 2 on Super NES, right? Right? All right, maybe not everyone, but certainly a lot. And then there's a new Puzzle Fighter coming to mobile. Puzzle Fighter, you know, there's a lot of... I mean, there were a lot of cool puzzle games back in the day, and that was one of them. It was actually fun as a puzzle game itself, and the mobile platform is probably a great place for it to be, except it's probably going to be free to play, and it's going to be annoying in that regard. But yeah, we'll have to see again how that one works out. It's going to be releasing in late 2017. Oh, and that Yakuza-powered Hokuto no Ken is coming out in 2018. So it's still a little bit away. And finally, let's go to the fall 2017 releases. That is kind of a crazy time. So how will we do this? I think I'm going to go month by month. Probably makes the most sense, even if it's a little bit arbitrary. Fall 2017 is going to be pretty insane. We've been saying it. 2016 was crazy. 2017 has been crazy, and it's going to get crazier. Again, it's become kind of a common beating a dead horse at this point, saying that we used to have like one great game a month and we had enough time to play it. And nowadays, not so much. We have like five that we want to play every week, it seems. Maybe not that bad, but it certainly is the case for the coming 3 months, 3 to 4 months. I thought it was a good opportunity to talk about this now. And we're going to start with September. I'm going to go over the major games that are released in each month, major to semi-major. I'm not going to go over everything. Obviously, there are some that I'm going to be missing that you might be looking forward to. If that's the case, please let me know. There are the comments on the website, frenchspin.com. I'm available on Twitter as well. And I would love to hear which games you are looking forward to, whether they're in the list that I'm going to go through or just other ones that I didn't mention, and why you are looking forward to them. So the first one is coming out in just a few days, Destiny 2. It's coming out on the 8th. I'll go over the list for September and then talk about some of them. Coming out in October 24th on Windows again. Destiny Original Sin 2 is coming out on the 14th. On the 19th, we have Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite. 26th is Danganronpa V3. 29 is Cuphead. And 29 as well is FIFA 18. Okay, so just a few. Destiny 2 I've talked about at length. I'll probably be talking about it in the next episode, telling you what I think, because it's very likely I'm going to be spending some time on it. Marvel versus Capcom Infinite, it's the kind of game that, you know, those games I was talking about, where if it was the game that came out, that was the one game that I wanted to play that came out in a month, I would be playing it like crazy and playing it with my friends and all of this. I don't even think I'm going to be getting it this time because, well, I don't know. But, I mean, I'm not going to have time to play it. It's the Marvel property certainly has a huge appeal for me. I'm a big fan of the MCU, and I would love to play Marvel-themed games. And this one is... It's also the revival of the fighting game genre, which is getting a little bit overwhelming. And I already don't have time I'm not taking the time to play games I love, like King of Fighters or Tekken 7. And so I don't know that I'm going to have time to play Marvel versus Capcom Infinite, even though I would want to. So we'll see. That's coming out on the 19th. And Cuphead on the 29th. That's a really interesting one. I haven't, my Xbox is put away because I haven't been playing it for a long time. So maybe I'll be getting it on Steam, but I'm not sure it's a game for me. It's certainly one that a lot of people have been waiting for. And it's almost a game that I want to watch more than play, although the transformation into run and gun rather than boss rush gave it more appeal for me. But yeah, so it's coming out on the 29th. I don't know that I'm going to be spending the money again, because there are other things that I want to play. October, on the 3rd, Forza Motorsports 7. On the 10th, Shadow of War. 13th, The Evil Within 2. On the 17th, The Fractured But Whole and Gran Turismo Sport. And on the 27th, that's like... crazy day. It's probably the biggest day, I think, for the entire fall. We have Super Mario Odyssey, Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus, and Assassin's Creed Origins. So let's go over some of those. Forza Motorsport 7 and GT Sport are going to be super... It's kind of like fighting games for me and people like me. It's going to be those games that people who love that genre are going to be super excited about. I think it's fairly acceptable to say that Forza has taken over as the best game in the genre over Gran Turismo over the past few years, I would say. And Motorsports is the more realistic version of the game. So GT Sport is going to make GT fans happy. And if you get into the minutia of why this game is more like this or like that or realistic than the other, there are fans of each, of course. But and of course, you know, obviously the fact that Forza is on Xbox and GT is on PlayStation. But yeah, so the fans of the driving car racing genre are going to be super happy no matter which platform they're on. Shadow of War, I am very much looking forward to that game. I expressed some... I was a little bit worried about Shadow of War. And a few people, again, people who have had an opportunity to play it, have told me that I shouldn't be worried. It is absolutely the great version of the first one, not reinventing the wheel, but adding enough on the great wheel that the first one was that it makes it shine even more. So yeah, that is probably going to be, I want to say, the game of the month for me, but as we get towards the end of the month, we're seeing Super Mario Odyssey, which, I mean, I'm going to be playing a lot of Shadow of War. And then on the 27th, Mario Odyssey comes out. And I'm a big fan of Mario. I think most gamers at least like it. And most gamers among those are big fans. But the reason this one is even more exciting than any other Mario has been is, of course, the incredible success game-wise, game design-wise, of The Legend of Zelda. And if Mario manages to be half as brilliant as Zelda is, it's going to be a great Mario. So a great Mario is always something to celebrate. And it's one of the things that makes me giddy as a gamer. It's not really even a genre that I love. It's just the Mario games are a genre unto themselves. I don't necessarily like other platformers, but the Mario ones are the ones that I'm, you know, platformers used to be one of the only things there was if you go back a couple of decades. Now I'm not necessarily going to go seek them out, but Mario remains one of the quality gaming experiences that I look forward to. So yeah, the 27th is also going to be a momentous day in gaming for the fall. And that's not even mentioning that we get Wolfenstein 2 and Assassin's Creed Origins. Now, Wolfenstein 2, I'm looking forward to, but I think it's one of those that are going to fall by the wayside, and I'm going to see what happens a couple of months after that. If it's a little bit cheaper, I might get it. Maybe in early 2018, we'll see. But it's one of those games I certainly would have gotten immediately and played it if there wasn't just a million other things. And Assassin's Creed Origins is also one of those, but even more importantly, it's that return after a 1 year break for the series, which I would love to see what they have been doing with it, but I don't think I'm going to get past the basically watching reviews on YouTube and getting my fill. Like that, not even Let's Plays, but just reviews and seeing if it's for me. And unless they go like, this game is amazing, you have to play it now, I don't think I'm going to get it quite the moment it comes out. It's probably going to be, I'm going to be waiting a little bit more. But yeah, we'll have to see. November. On the 3rd, we have Call of Duty World War II. On the 10th, Need for Speed Payback. 17th, Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. 17th, Star Wars Battlefront 2. And then probably in November, supposedly in November, a game called Vampire with a Y, and Fire Emblem Warriors that are coming out. I'll just go over the other games that have been announced for this year but don't have a release date yet. There's Wargroove, that old-school tactical turn-based strategy game that a lot of people are looking forward to on the Switch. There's Gwent coming out, Call of Cthulhu coming out as well, which might be interesting. Mountain Blade 2, a little bit more niche, but certainly it has its fans. And Xenoblade Chronicles 2 still doesn't have a release date, but Switch owners are going to be looking forward to that, I'm sure, especially if they're fans of the JRPG genre. So that's basically everything for 2017. But let's go back to October. I mean, Call of Duty, it's kind of like FIFA. It's well, although I'm saying this, but Call of Duty has become less relevant than it was in the past few years. But certainly it's going to see its share of sales. And World War II is surprisingly an interesting setting for that game. Need for Speed Payback. It's kind of, is it Fast and Furious enough to generate some interest on our part? I don't, I'm, one of those. We need a name for the games that we would have been interested in if there wasn't just everything coming out at the same time. I don't know how we can call them. Maybe pineapples or whatever. So it's one of those pineapples that I'm not going to seek out immediately. Star Wars is... I was a little bit burned by the first one, meaning I got it, it was fun for an hour, and then I regretted spending my money. Or I didn't regret it, but I didn't play it again. So after a couple of months, I was like, well, maybe I shouldn't have spent that money. But it didn't have a single player experience, and this one does. So I think it's... clarifying. I wouldn't be super interested in that game even with the single player experience. However, we have to remember that the new movie is coming out in December, and that might generate enough excitement on my part that I'm going to go, okay, I want more Star Wars. And so I'm going to dive into that. Maybe if it's just the single player experience for Battlefront 2, it might be enough to hold me over, to convince me to fork over the $60 or so that it demands of us. I might wait a little bit for the price to fall, but it lines up perfectly with the movie being released in December, so it's going to be a few weeks apart. I don't know. We'll see there too, but I'm still on the fence. But so if I recap, of the games that I'm definitely going to be playing and that I'm super excited for, there's Destiny 2. I'm going over the list here. Destiny 2, Shadow of War, and Mario Odyssey. And those are three games that I am like buying blind day one. And other games that I'm possibly interested in, Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, possibly Cuphead, let's see, Wolfenstein 2, maybe Assassin's Creed Origin, more maybe, a Need for Speed Payback, maybe. So that's five. And so three definitely, five maybe. That's a lot of game for a 3 month period. And that's the world we live in today. We have lots of compelling games coming out, and that's awesome. And it seems that the developers are managing to sell all of them. You know, it's not like they're tripping over each other. I mean, not all of them, but overall, it's kind of like the movie industry, but bigger weight-wise. Each developer, or each publisher rather, is not necessarily going to be making money on every game, but overall they're doing really well and they're all making money on average. So it's healthy. It's a healthy industry. It's a healthy market, and gamers are happy. Publishers are happy. Developers, hopefully, a lot of the time are happy. And I'm only talking about the big games here because they are the, you know, it's a fairly wide audience, meaning like I talk to a lot of different kinds of gamers on this show. So I don't delve into specific genres too much, except maybe for indulging in fighting games sometimes because I can't help myself. But there are a lot of other games that get a lot of gamers super excited. And indies are something that I don't cover too much, but there are a lot of them coming out as well. We could do an entire episode talking about the, you know, the Warriors franchise. We've seen a number of them come out, and the Fire Emblem Warriors one is going to be a nice break for people who like the strategy game to try and find those characters in another setting. We have the Mount & Blade games that have a rabid following, etc., etc. So, yeah, I guess, as I said, we're beating a dead horse now, but great time to be a gamer. And that's going to be it for this episode. I would really love to hear from you guys if you have some reasons to love some of the games, or which ones you're the most excited about, which ones you really can't wait to dive into. And I didn't even mention the Blizzard games because, you know, they're not getting new releases. But I've been playing, for example, Patch 7.3 for the past few days, and it's been super exciting as well. And certainly the Hearthstone fans have been enjoying the Druid of the Frozen Throne, or at least, you know, they've been enjoying the latest expansion as well, with a dominated Druid meta, or Druid dominating the meta, but that's another discussion. But I'm talking about those games because they are the ones that I play, but almost every game is a game as a service now, and we've seen new content for games like The Division or For Honor, or, you know, all of those games that are, and PUBG has, well, this one we did mention, but it also has some stuff coming. It's still in development officially, but beating a dead horse-ish thing to say. Great time to be a gamer. Let me know which ones you're waiting for, you're expecting the most, excited for the most, and why. Ones that I didn't mention, maybe you can go to frenchspin.com to leave a comment on the article for this episode. You can also reach me at NotPatrick on Twitter or on Facebook. I'm if you search for NotPatrick there, you can find me as well. And that's going to be it for this episode. I hope you had a good time. I certainly did. And we will be back in a couple of weeks with a lot of things to discuss. And hopefully, I will be very happy about Destiny 2. We'll have to see. Talk to you then. Bye.